individual's current needs and provide for future financial security.
This was Daft Punk. Now the electronic dance duo says technology isn't everything.
What was really lacking to us is the soul that a musician can bring.
Daft Punk, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
You're listening to WILL. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Chris Berube. Now, if you're involved in agriculture, you know the danger of trying to grow crops where they really don't belong. A dozen universities, though, are collaborating on a sort of extreme winemaking project. How cold a climate can a grape survive in and still make good wine? The Northern Grapes Project is inventing wines the world has never seen before, and they're winning awards and creating a new crop for struggling rural economies. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein has this story.
Join me on the northern border of New York State, near Canada, in Coyote Moon's tasting room. Christina Randazzo Ives has a pitch for all her 20 wines, except one. This deep blue bottle contains what's believed to be the first commercial Frontenac Blanc ever, and she's at a loss for words.
It's hard. I mean, all I can tell you is nobody else has this.
The Frontenac Blanc is a cousin of the Frontenac, the very first cold hardy wine grape in the country. To understand why the Frontenac was a leap in viticulture, the science of growing grapes, let's head outside. 6 years ago, the Randazzo family began turning scrubby, abandoned farmland into this 20-acre vineyard. This isn't the upstate New York of the Finger Lakes, where wines like Rieslings have become world-class. This is way north, where the mercury plummets to 30 below zero.
We get pounded with very cold, icy, cold, thunderous temperatures.
And traditional wine grapes don't survive winters like that.
You know, I had people call me from up here and say, we've been thinking about planting grapes, and I say, are you nuts?
That's Tim Martinson, a viticulturalist with Cornell University. He and a couple dozen other researchers took it as a challenge. They started the Northern Grape Project in 12 states to help cold climate wines thrive. Martinson uses Coyote Moon as a test site. He and Randazzo Ives tinker with new ways to tie up vine branches to promote healthy grapes.
Basically, what we do is bring this over the top, wind it over.
Martinson explains you have to work around cold, hardy grapes' disadvantages. They tend toward acidity. They can lack body, mostly because of the short growing season. And that's why the wine establishment has been skeptical. Wine Spectator magazine doesn't even review cold climate wines. But the mad scientists behind all these cold hardy grapes say they're making breakthroughs.
My name is Peter Hempstead, and I'm the grape breeder at the University of Minnesota.
Well, maybe not mad, but determined. It took Hempstead's team almost 20 years to develop the Frontenac in 1996. A decade later, they released the Marquette, and they were psyched. They were psyched as Minnesotan grape breeders get.
The flavor was excellent. The crop was good. It had some tannin, which is part of the structure that you're going to get from the European grapes.
Marquette wines are starting to generate buzz as an up-and-coming stand-in for Pinot Noirs. Hempstead concedes these new vineyards of the North are a long way from matching France or California's best. But he says they're reinvigorating rural economies, and they mesh perfectly with buy local culture.
You know, they're not going to compete with Napa Valley. But if you think of Vermont, you've got the small-scale sugar producers, the cheese operators, and now you'll have the small-scale wineries right down the street.
Today, there are hundreds of cold, hardy winemakers across the northern U.S., and the University of Minnesota continues to develop new grapes, which brings us back to that Frontenac Blanc at Coyote Moon in northern New York. Christina Randazzo Ives pours me a glass. It's aromatic, with peach and nectarine, but also caramel smooth. I didn't know what to expect. I mean, it's a totally new grape. Randazzo Ives says that's exactly what the next generation of wine drinkers is seeking, diversity and adventure.
They're searching out brands and things that they like, which makes the small winery experience and going to different places that have a variety of wine so popular and successful.
In 3.5 years of winemaking, Coyote Moon's won almost 500 awards. That includes Best of Class among non-traditional reds for its Marquette from the San Francisco Chronicle, one of America's most prestigious wine competitions. Randazzo Ives believes Frontenac Blanc may just be next. For NPR News, I'm David Summerstein in Northern New York.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. State universities across the state of Illinois are trying to cope with continued reductions in state funding. On Tuesday, administrators at Western Illinois University unveiled a plan to cut costs, but workers at the campus in Macomb are learning that the plan is just the first step in a long process. Illinois Public Radio's Rich Egger has this report.
Oh, Western President Jack Thomas let out a sigh of relief after delivering the news to hundreds of current and former workers during a forum in the university union. Thomas says Western will continue to avoid layoffs and furloughs, but it's not known how long that can continue.
We will do it as long as we can. And right now, as you see with the cuts that we're having, we are using the attrition dollars from the positions that are vacant.
26 vacant positions will not be filled. The school will also make other cuts, such as the travel budgets. Thomas says the $4.5 million saved will ensure there is money for already negotiated pay raises. Instead of just cutting, are there any creative ideas for increasing revenue?
Well, one has to do with enrollment. If we get the enrollment up, we will that will help to generate more revenue for us. And when we talk about the retention rate, increasing the our retention rates.
Thomas says courses must still be offered to all those students, so adjuncts and temporary employees might be hired to help carry the load. John Miller does not like that idea. He's president of the local chapter of the University Professionals of Illinois. The group represents faculty.
We also have research that will demonstrate, again, consistently, that tenure-track faculty members, which is where they want to cut, are the ones that have more time to develop relationships with the students. And the development of those relationships with those students is what helps those students succeed.
Miller also says there is more at stake than funding college classrooms. He says study after study has shown states that put money into higher education develop stronger economies. Miller says if Illinois is to succeed, state lawmakers must find ways to support colleges and universities.
I think one of the things is that the state needs to finally cut some of these corporate loopholes that are out there that account for upward of $1 billion plus. Those loopholes have not been cut, and they need to be cut. They need to close those loopholes to put the money back into this. And those businesses are the ones that are going to directly benefit from an educated workforce.
The past decade has been tough on public university budgets in Illinois. But President Thomas says Western can get through it.
We just have to plan and be very strategic in what we do.
However, even with planning, more cutting might be required in a few months once it's known what the state will do to Western's next budget. Rich Egger reporting.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 16th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of one of the first well-known female mathematicians born in Milan in 1718, Maria Gaetana Agnesi. Her father, Pietro, a businessman, her mother, an aristocrat. The child was a brilliant little girl. By the age of 10, she spoke 5 languages. At the age of 9, she addressed a group of academics in Latin on the subject of women's rights and access to education. She wanted to enter a convent, but when her mother died, she had to take charge of the household and care for her many siblings. But she maintained her interest in math and philosophy. And in 1733, she published a collection of essays based on the talks that she had given to her father's circle of friends. And that same year, she began working on a math textbook, which grew into a larger work, and in which she wrote an equation for a specific bell-shaped curve that is still used today. The book Analytical Institutions, published 1748, highly regarded in academic circles for synthesizing complex mathematical ideas. It's the birthday of the writer, radio man, Louis Terkel, Studs Terkel. Born in the Bronx in New York, 1912, family moved to Chicago when he was just 10 years old. His books included Division Street America, Hard Times, Working. Studs Terkel died in 2008 at the age of 96. He said, "I've always felt in all my books that there's a deep decency in the American people and a native intelligence, providing they have the information." Here's a poem for today by Connie Wanick, entitled Walking Distance, for Stanley Dentinger, 1922 to 2004. Walking distance used to be much farther, miles and miles. Your grandfather, as a young man with a wife and new baby son, walked to and from his job, which was in the next town. That was Iowa, 1946, and it was not a hardship, but an opportunity, which is youth speaking. And also a particular man of German descent, walking on good legs on white gravel roads, smoking cigarettes, which were cheap, though not free as they'd been during the war. Tobacco burned toward his fingers, but never reached them. The fire was small and personal, almost intimate, glowing bright when he put the cigarette to his lips and breathed through it. So many cigarettes before bombing runs, and none had been his last. A great surprise. Sometimes he passed a farmer burning field grass in the spring, the smoldering line advancing toward the fence. He had to know what he was doing so near the barn. You had to be close to see the way blades of dry grass passed the flame along at a truly individual level, very close to see how delicious a meal the field was to the fire on a damp, calm, almost English morning, ideal for walking. A poem by Connie Wanick, Walking Distance, from On Speaking Terms, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to